This is Don Letts, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Accra. Stay tuned.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Accra, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. And today we will hear about the month in history from Rob Gellis, WGXC's own history expert. And we'll also hear from our friends at WOOC who talk with Thomas Kearney, the founder and executive director of the nonprofit organization Capital Area Relief and Liberation. And he talks about helping people return to the community from incarceration on the WGXC Morning Show. Plus, we'll hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather and the Catskill Maker Syndicate. All this and more starts after the WGXC local news, which is next. Stay tuned.
Channel connection and the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news.
Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program, administered in Greene County by CREATE, the Alexander and Marjorie Hover Foundation, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXC's sustaining supporters, who provide critical monthly support to Wave Farm's radio station, WGXC 90.7 FM. Thank you.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of the Rodney Shop in Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. Steve Hughes reports in the Times Union that Albany County announced a record 1,003 positive coronavirus cases December 31st, and 657 more on January 1st. On January 2nd, Albany County reported an additional 558 new positive cases. Albany County had 23 new hospitalizations announced January 2nd, with 84 county residents currently hospitalized with coronavirus and 10 patients in ICUs. Quote, the spike in hospitalizations is alarming, nearly doubling from the day before and bringing us to the highest number of people hospitalized with COVID-19 since this all started, unquote, said Albany County Executive Dan McCoy. Quote, we know that getting a vaccination is the best protection in fighting the virus, and if vaccinated, a person contracts COVID-19, he or she is less likely to experience severe symptoms, be hospitalized, or die. I continue to urge those who are unvaccinated to get a shot and get the booster when you are eligible. Do it for yourself, your loved ones, and our community, unquote. On January 4th, the state is opening a regional testing site at Crossgates Mall, open Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. The Times Union also reports three more COVID-19 deaths, one in Greene County and two in Rensselaer County. Columbia County announced 155 new cases on January 2nd, 460 current active cases, 25 hospitalized, and 3 in the ICU. Greene County announced 93 more cases on December 30th, with 21 hospitalized then, and has not provided the public any information since then. Dutchess County reported another death and added 526 cases January 2nd, for a total of 5,042. That's 2,500 more than the county's January 2021 peak. Ulster County added 198 COVID-19 cases on December 30th, with 2,161 total. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
Roger Hannigan-Gilson reports in the Times Union that polystyrene foam containers are banned in New York as of New Year's Day. No more styrofoam takeout containers or so-called packing peanuts will be allowed as of January 1st. Polystyrene foam breaks apart easily but takes hundreds of years to biodegrade and is difficult to recycle. Many communities have already banned polystyrene foam, as two-thirds of New Yorkers already live where it is not allowed. Only nonprofits and government agencies that provide food to low-income people at no cost can continue using the material after January 1st. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
Andrea Macko is reporting for Porcupine Soup that Greene County legislator Jack Keller died suddenly on December 30th. The announcement was made by Town of Catskill Republican Club Chair and fellow Greene County legislator Matthew Lavera. A Republican, Keller was reelected twice to the legislature and would have started his second three-year term in January. He was one of four legislators representing the town of Catskill. Quote, "It's with great sadness that our Catskill Republican Committee announces the death of our colleague, friend, committee person, and legislator Jack Keller, who passed away unexpectedly," unquote, Lavera wrote. Quote, "Jack was a quiet, humble man that stepped up to serve his community when others would not. He took his service to our community very serious," unquote. According to Natasha Von Holdridge, writing for Columbia Green Media, Keller thought government should be for the people and by the people. He was the former owner of Pit Stop Discount Beverages and had also worked in advertising for Young Broadcasting, Clear Channel, and Turner Broadcasting. Circumstances of Keller's death have not been disclosed, and funeral arrangements have not been announced. Quote, "I'm shocked over this news, and I know our legislature and Republican committee will miss Jack's presence. He was a gentle soul that never wished harm on others and stood true to his convictions," unquote, Lavera said. Quote, "Our prayers to Jack's family and friends," unquote. Read more about this story at porcupinesoup.com.
William J. Kimball reports in the Daily Freeman that Socrates Town Board members Leanne Thornton, Peg Now, and Michael Avino voted December 29th not to accept the tax dollars that come with allowing cannabis stores and lounges. Fred Costello and John Schoonmaker voted to allow retail sales in Socrates, with Costello the only board member voting for consumption lounges. That vote came after a two-hour public hearing with comments both in favor and against cannabis commerce in Socrates. Cannabis is currently allowed in Socrates and the rest of the state after lawmakers changed the law in April. Municipalities have until December 31st to opt out of retail sales and consumption lounges and the tax dollars that come with the businesses. Ivino challenged local residents to break the law. He said, and I quote, "I encourage anybody who wants to not opt out, to get in their car and drive home without the lights on, because that's what New York's doing to us right now by having us opt out or in," end quote. Schoonmaker lamented the lost income for the community. He said, and I quote, "Kingston, Ulster, Catskill, Woodstock, they're all going to have these stores, so I'll just be driving there and back. So what difference does it make if we have them or not? At least this was our town can benefit from these instead of me driving to Catskill, buying my product there, and then I'll probably just out and eat in Catskill," end quote. The board decision could be challenged by February 12th with a petition containing at least 881 signatures asking for a public referendum. And the town board could also vote again in the future to reverse the decision. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman.
Melanie Lekasevic is reporting for Capital Region Independent Media that former Queeman's Planning Board Zoning Board of Appeals member Marisa Tuta has been appointed to the Queeman's Town Board effective January 1st. Tuta succeeds board member Zachary Collins, who now represents the town on the Albany County Legislature. The town board accepted Collins' resignation at its December 23rd meeting. quote, this is a bittersweet moment for me because we ran together in 2019 and won together, and I think I have talked to you twice a day every day since then, unquote. Town Supervisor George McHugh told Collins, quote, it's bittersweet in that I will miss you terribly here because you were a great asset to this board and this town, but it's sweet in a way because you will move on to the county level and will be a great asset to us there, unquote. Collins, a Republican, won the vacant seat in the November general election. Quote, Marissa has been on the planning board for a couple of years now, and when we had a vacancy when Kenny Burns left, she was one of two folks that we had entertained appointing to the board, unquote, McHugh said. Tate is a lifelong Queeman's resident and lives on the western edge of the town with her husband and three children on property that Tate family has owned for more than 100 years, McHugh said. Tate is a 1987 graduate of the Ravenna Queeman's Selkirk School District and a graduate of the College of St. Rose and SUNY Albany. She's been a teacher for 31 years and is currently employed as a curriculum content specialist for math and science and a math interventionist at A.W. Becker Elementary School in Selkirk. Town Clerk Cindy Rousey ended her service with the board's December 23rd meeting. She ran unsuccessfully for town supervisor and will be replaced by Laura Jan Barry. Read more about this story in the Ravenna News Herald.
Danny Jen reports in the Berkshire Eagle that 15 Afghan evacuees have moved into Berkshire County and another 16 more are coming by the end of January. Jewish Family Services of Western Massachusetts is ready, having resettled many Jewish refugees from the former Soviet Union in Berkshire County during the 1980s and 1990s. The Jewish Family Services teamed with elected officials and community partners in 2016 to resettle refugees from Syria and Iraq. Those plans were scuttled in 2017 when President Donald Trump cut refugee admissions and banned Syrian refugees from entering the U.S. for several months. Maxine Stein, president and CEO of Jewish Family Services of Western Massachusetts, said, and I quote, "We were about to launch a robust Berkshire's program when the presidential administration changed and the immigration policies changed," end quote. She went on to say, and I quote, "And then the situation in Afghanistan pops up, but even before that, we already had started engaging in the hopes that the Berkshires might be interested in trying this again," end quote. But there is already an affordable housing shortage in Western Massachusetts and throughout the Hudson Valley. Jewish Family Services continues to look for affordable three-bedroom apartments or larger, and some Afghan evacuees will stay temporarily at a home in Williamstown through June, while other families will have permanent housing in the Pittsfield area. The group is working with Al-Khalil Islamic Center in Pittsfield and attempting to integrate the newcomers into the community. Maxine Stein, president and CEO of Jewish Family Services of Western Massachusetts, said, and I quote, "We are resettling here, but that's not the way that we want to do it. We really want to engage with the community and make sure it is not just your agenda, but their agenda as well." Read more about this story in the Berkshire Eagle.
Amanda Burke is reporting for the Berkshire Eagle that Jennifer Maxey made history January 1st when she was sworn in as the first woman mayor of North Adams, Massachusetts. After taking the oath of office as the city's 33rd mayor during a ceremony held at Drury High School, Maxey pledged a commitment to securing both generational change and basic services. Quote, "My administration's biggest challenge will be to regain the confidence in our residents to believe in government so they believe we will and can work in their best interest," unquote. The Democrat addressed approximately 175 onlookers at the event, which also saw the swearing-in of a new city council. Following a difficult, divisive year in North Adams politics, the theme of the proceeding was collaboration, Maxey said. Quote, "My administration's biggest challenge will be to regain the confidence in our residents to believe in government so they believe we will and can work in their best interest," unquote. She pledged to be a hands-on mayor, describing her vision as being an accessible leader who is present in schools, businesses, and neighborhoods while representing her constituents in, quote, "the most respectful and honorable manner," unquote. Maxey is the city's former director of finance. She promised to break ground on a new public safety complex, quote, "within the next 2 years," unquote, while financing the undertaking, quote, "without placing an unfair tax burden on our taxpayers," unquote. She also vowed to address deteriorating streets, homes, sidewalks, and flood control systems, while giving immediate attention to the historic library and restoring Western Gateway Heritage State Park. Maxie said she will eliminate blight, get tough on absentee landlords, and reinstate the position of municipal code enforcement officer. She noted that improving the quality of life in North Adams begins with safety first. This year is a year of firsts for North Adams. Maxie became the city's first woman mayor. Ashley Shade is the first transgender person. And Michael Ubasashian is the first person of color to serve on the city council. Read more about this story in the Berkshire Eagle.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day.
National Weather Service in Albany predicts Monday should be partly sunny with a high of just 22 degrees and a low around 14. Tuesday should also be sunny and a little warmer with a high near 34 and a low around 25. And then Wednesday, there's a 20% chance of snow showers before 11 a.m., then possibly turning toward rain. Mostly cloudy skies, a high of 39 and a low around 28. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM Acre, Catskill, Hudson, radio for open ears. You have tuned into all sorts of creative community voices on the radio at 90.7 FM on Monday, January 3rd, including at 10 a.m. We get into the Afrosonic Taxi to hear tracks today from Aki Bermis, Carla Vissens, Tyson Maya, and others. Then after the local news at noon, it's time for the Deep Three show, today with tracks from Rachel Theron Quintet, Kevin Blechdom, and Isotope 217, among others. Then at 2 p.m., the Vital Weekly Show features brand new music from around the world, and today we'll hear tracks from Tetsuya Akiyama, Sarah Klaman, and Wakana Ikeda, among others. At 4 p.m., Kieran Riley hosts a WGXC afternoon show live from Housatonic in Western Massachusetts. Marcy Winograd is one of the guests on the Law and Disorder show at 7 p.m. on the radio at WGXC. And then Nick and Lisa are live from the WGXC Acre studio at 10 p.m. for the latest edition of their Radiant Point show, which has no borders musically and plays all sorts of things. Tune in from 10 to midnight on 90.7 FM WGXC.
To get a local event mentioned on All Together Now, go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page. And copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
This Thursday, January 6th, is the one-year anniversary of an attempted coup in this country where a group of people tried to overthrow the government, throw out the election of Joe Biden, even though there was no voter fraud and no court has found any voter fraud, and several policemen were killed, and few of the rioters have been held accountable so far. People across the country are rallying to observe this day across the country, including rallies in Albany and Williamstown, Massachusetts, locally. Go to January6UnityDay.org for more information about these efforts around the country on Thursday, January 6th.
Find out where the music takes Montreal's Rachel Therrien on the next Deep Threes when the trumpeter blows the roof off the joint, backed by her quintet. Plus tracks from Reza Bassi, Isotope 217, and Oleg Zaler. Deep Threes, music beyond boundaries for a digital world.
Tune in to Deep Threes after the noon news on Monday at WGXC 90.7 FM.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Monday, January 3rd. 0.8% of the way through the year, 76 days left until spring. Early morning temperatures range from 15 degrees in Courtright Center to 27 degrees in Kingston. A large system is flowing through the northeast today. It will be dropping snow as far north as White Plains, maybe Newburgh. Either way, the listening area should be dry but cloudy with a high of only 25 degrees at 3 p.m. Winds coupled with humidity set up today's overall condition to be sub-freezing. Protect from blowing winds, layer it up. It is hat and glove time. Overnight temperatures fall to 15 degrees. Tomorrow will be dry, winds won't be quite as strong, and temperatures will reach 33 degrees. 27 degrees overnight takes us into a mildly wet Wednesday with a high of 41. Thursday, looking dry with a high of 38 degrees. Friday is looking pretty snowy. We're going to keep an eye on that, though. For more specific discussions, are taking place on the Better Weather Telegram channel. You can access that by going to t.me/TheBetterWeather, all one word. The hottest temperature predicted this week is 41 degrees. The coldest temperature predicted is 16. Today's tide schedule is high tide at 2:53 a.m., then low tide at 9:23 a.m., high tide again at 3:14 p.m., and low tide again at 10:10 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 35 degrees. Sunset today will be at 4:21 p.m. and sunrise tomorrow will be at 7:19 a.m. Looking way up, we see Earth is entering the debris field of comet fragment 3002EH1, bringing on the quadranted meteor shower. Peak is expected today at 3:40 p.m. Meteor scatter should be enhanced with about 60 meteors per hour expected. Solar wind speed is currently 533 kilometers per second at 8.7 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently terrible. Fair conditions exist below 2 megahertz till dark, then fair below 5 megahertz. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 4, unsettled. The current sunspot number is 25. And this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Scout of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
And then I just, there's good news. Good evening.
The
kill
us so we had to go.
The
kill us so we had to go. The kill us so we had to go. The kill us so we had to go. The kill us so we had to go. The kill us so we had to go. The kill us so we had to go.
That was Elliot Sharp and Vox Nova Italia with They Killed Us So We Had to Go, from the 2021 album Felicetti Mecchedisi.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
I'll never forgive former President of the United States and his lackeys and his bullies that he sent to the Capitol for the trauma that was exerted on our staff.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi on the upcoming anniversary of the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. A new intelligence assessment warns that, quote, threat actors and lone offenders may act that day, though there are currently no specific threats. A new CBS News poll finds two-thirds of Americans see the January 6th attack as a sign of rising political violence. And while Republicans overall disapprove of the attacks, 4 in 10 Republicans say the rioters were actually left-leaning groups pretending to be Trump supporters. Former President Trump will hold a news conference at his Mar-a-Lago resort on the 6th, followed by a series of campaign-style rallies across the country. Kentucky State House Republicans have unveiled new district maps. Republican lawmakers say they conform to fair population divisions based on new census figures. The maps pit 4 sets of incumbents against each other, 4 Republicans and 4 Democrats. State House Democratic Minority Leader Joni Jenkins called the holiday weekend release an attempt at fake transparency.
We will be looking at these maps very, very closely. It may be possible that we will offer something as an alternative.
Twitter has permanently suspended the personal account of Georgia Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene for repeated violations of its COVID-19 misinformation policy. On Saturday, Greene tweeted false claims about pandemic public health measures. A new law just went into effect aiming to end surprise medical billing for out-of-network emergency care. The bipartisan legislation passed during the Trump administration has been hailed by consumer advocates. Rachel Bluth of Kaiser Health News says the bills total billions of dollars each year.
Some studies say that up to 1 in 5 emergency room visits could result in a surprise bill, over $100,000 for a heart attack.
In spite of this, older adults will likely pay more for health care in 2022. Many Medicare beneficiaries will see premiums rise by more than 14%. That's on top of prescription drug prices, which have risen at 3 times inflation in the last few years. Richard Frank with the Brookings Institution says part of President Biden's Build Back Better Act would penalize companies that raise their prices faster than economic growth.
We can save a lot of money on drugs that don't add that much to our therapeutic arsenal and continue to reward the drugs that do.
I'm Nadia Ramlagan for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Oodles and oodles of O's, you know. You get them from my sister, you get them from my bro. All I is man and once an embryo. Am I solid gold? I don't cast the glow. Yes, I guess it's reflex, some have no control. I'd rather let a laughter and tally off I go. Canoeing up the river or out into the O. You just know me not, so not play the role. Some are lovey-dovey, I hear crazy crow. Some shake your hand, but this is called the show. I was John Doe, no, Mr. Jalico. This with the witness, and now I adore. O's got the world, cause O's was on tour. Girls gave the O's and guys O's for sure. Where they arose from, nobody knows. What do they mean? Well, here's how it goes. O's shoots got the O's when you hold the dough. You know who you are, but they didn't know. And now with respect, they flex like a pro. You're first another nigga, but now an afro. Oodles and oodles and O's and oodles and oodles and oodles of O's. You know they giving oodles. It's the tongue that speaks the guacamole. Kinfolk with platers and stereo. Chant is played a part of a herd at a show. Pots prints the piece on his jeans or Jabos. But let the herd know if beef they want to throw. Lunches of punches is what I bestow. Oodles of O's and has my hoes and my checks. O's take the shape of medallions and specs. Don't forget the O's that let the air in my nose. Breathe in the fresh as the stale hit the road. Girls ask for flicks and I'll block the poles. Eat the owl greens, won't sniff the shirt clothes. Mace got something to say and it goes.
Macy O is rocking on the radio.
Now I think we're talking about the oodles of O's, you know. I think we're talking about the oodles of O's, yeah. We're talking about the oodles of O's, you know. I think we're talking about
narrow and bow, targeted firm, cause I'm here Comancho. Charging barricades like a raging rhino. The donuts come big and some in jumbo. The landlord is finished, but before I go, I give a shout out to Quest and my fellow jungle bro.
Not by the dock of the bay, by the show. Swimming in the rhythm of the hottie, hottie ho. Punk Pinocchio's gotta go, gotta go.
What's the reason?
To be cheerful. Season is grease, time to pimp promo. Nuts can overflow if the shade is in the go. On with me hat, dreadlock is heading out the door, y'all. We're selling those, y'all. We're selling those and O's. We're selling those at the corner store, y'all. We're selling those, y'all. We're selling poodles and poodles and poodles and poodles of O's, y'all. We're selling those, y'all. At the corner store, we're selling those at the corner store, y'all. We're selling those, y'all. At the corner store, we're selling O's and O's and O's, y'all. We're selling noodles and poodles of O's, y'all. We're selling noodles and poodles of O's, y'all. We're selling noodles and
you're listening to The Morning Show on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Hello, this is Rob Gellis with This Month in History, a chronicle of significant or infamous events in art, science, music, literature, sports, and war that occur this month either in the near or distant past. On January 1st, 1892, Ellis Island in New York Harbor opened. Over 20 million immigrants to America were processed until its closing in 1954. On January 3, 1959, Alaska was admitted as the 49th U.S. state with a landmass almost one-fifth of the size of the lower 40 states together. On January 7, 1800, Millard Fillmore, the 13th President of the United States, was born in a log cabin in Cayuga County, New York. On January 10, 1912, the flying boat airplane, invented by Glenn Curtiss, made its first flight at Hammersport, New York. On January 12, 1991, Congress authorized President George Bush to use military force against Iraq following its invasion of Kuwait. On January 15, 1535, Henry VIII became Supreme Head of the Church of England as a result of the Act of Supremacy following his break with Rome. On January 18, 1966, Robert Weaver was sworn in as the first African-American cabinet member in U.S. history, becoming President Lyndon B. Johnson's Secretary of Housing and Urban Development. On January 20, 1945, Franklin Delano Roosevelt was inaugurated to an unprecedented fourth term as President of the United States. On January 22, 1901, Queen Victoria of England died after reigning for 64 years, during which England had become the most powerful empire in the world. On January 24, 1848, the California Gold Rush began with the accidental discovery of the precious metal near Coloma, California, during construction of Sutter's Sawmill. On January 25, 1961, President John F. Kennedy conducted the first live televised presidential news conference 5 days after taking office. On January 28, 1915, the U.S. Coast Guard was created by Act of Congress, combining the Life Saving Service and the Revenue Cutter Service. On January 29, 1919, the 18th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, Prohibition Amendment, was ratified. It prohibited the manufacturing, selling, and consumption of alcohol. On January 31, 1919, Jackie Robinson was born in Cairo, Georgia. He was the first African-American to play Major League Baseball. You've been listening to This Month in History, a monthly broadcast of historic events on WGXC 90.7 FM. If you have an event you'd like to hear included in This Month in History, email me, Rob Gellis, at info@wgxc.org.
Would you like to do a show on WGXC?
Would you like to do a show on WGXC?
Would you like to do a show on WGXC?
Would you like to do a show?
Interesting, boring, really, really,
really,
really boring.
It would be about wonderful things. It would be about
chocolate pigs.
She's obsessed with pigs.
Chocolate pigs?
Pigs are awesome.
All the way down.
I turned it down.
But only dogs can hear.
I turned it down. Did you hear that?
No.
And you are listening. You're listening to 90.7 WGXC Acra Catskills. Today, East Durham. Catskills.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Thomas, welcome back to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine. It's so nice to speak with you again.
I'm very happy to be here. Thank you so much for the invite.
Since we last talked, you've been very involved and very busy with activities of the Capital Area Relief and Liberation Organization, and I believe you call the organization CARL because the longer name is quite a mouthful. Can you tell me, what have you been up to? What are your priorities these days?
Right now, what we've been doing is attempting to fill the gap in legislative advocacy from restructuring of a lot of organizations that have happened after the last legislative session. Basically, what we're working on right now are two main things in one new one, which would be Parole Justice New York, the two bills, Fair and Timely Parole and Elder Parole, that are connected to RAP campaign.
The RAP campaign is releasing aging people from prison, right?
That's correct. There is also the Clean Slate Coalition, which is pushing for individuals who have been out for a certain period of time to have their records wiped clean from public record, not necessarily from all the way from private record like police agencies and judges, but so that it would make it more fair for individuals who have already served their time and attempting to move forward with their lives to find housing and employment, which are some of the biggest barriers to moving forward after a conviction. And the one new thing is the Communities Not Cages Coalition. We're doing some legislative advocacy for, which is hopefully there's a one bill that's very important called the Second Chance Look that would allow a judge to look back on someone who's got a very long and drawn out sentence and evaluate whether or not that sentence after a certain period of time can be changed or commuted instead of just leaving it in the governor's hands for clemency.
What's the status of that piece of legislation?
Communities Not Cages is still building the coalition. The bills are actually still being written. So we're there on the ground floor working with community members to see and personally impact individuals. The Center for Community Alternatives is really leading this fight with personally impacted individuals. And we're here just hoping to add some input and help any way we can with the connections that we've already made with the legislator in the Capital Region.
That's exciting. We'll certainly follow the progress of that important piece of legislation. I understand you have a new initiative. It's a partnership with a private venture. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. This is an initiative that we're very proud of. I'm so happy to have been connected with Mikey from Return Brewing in Hudson. What we're calling this is the Second Chance Initiative that comes with a pledge from organizations and businesses in hiring formerly incarcerated individuals. Return Brewing has gone really far in what they've committed to do before they've even opened their doors. What we're trying to do is get organizations and businesses to not just agree to hire like formerly incarcerated individuals, but to take steps to make that happen and to also support legislation that walks mass incarceration back from the full speed ahead track that it's been on for way too long.
That's really exciting. There's a big difference between employers saying, you know, I'm not going to discriminate against someone who's got a criminal record, and employers who are actively putting steps in place to recruit and retain those folks.
Yes, that's exactly what we're asking. We're asking individuals to be absolutely intentional about seeking these people out. There's actually a form attached to the pledge where employers can actually list themselves, list job openings that they may have now or some that are coming up in the future. And like I said, be intentional about the process of hiring marginalized individuals.
So Mikey, how did you get involved in this initiative?
Just co-founded this brewery. We just started a couple months ago. Thomas and I got connected through a friend of a friend, and I just started telling him about our goals as a company. And he took that and ran with it and created this really, really awesome opportunity.
Tell me a little bit about Return Brewing. And I'm very interested in the name because I wonder if your thinking about the name had anything to do with people's return to the community after incarceration, or is that just a happy coincidence?
That's a great question. So to let you know who we are, we're a new brewing project, building out a tap room in Hudson, right in the downtown, and currently working with Crossroads Brewing in Catskill to release beers out to bars, restaurants, and grocery. I spent the last 9 years at Six Point Brewery in Brooklyn, but I grew up in Coxsackie, so I've seen the effects of gentrification and mass incarceration on the area. There's all these exciting things at work to make this a thriving, prosperous community, but to me, the question is, prosperous for whom? So we're well aware of the inherently gentrifying effects a craft brewery can have, so we're really trying from top to bottom to create a space for all members of the community. To talk to you about the name, it really is in some sense a happy coincidence, but what I love about this name and why we chose this name is because it means different things to different people. My favorite meaning, and there's a lot of them that we've come up with, my favorite meaning is sort of the transportative effect that taste and smell can give you and how it can return you to a moment. But really, we encourage people to let the name mean what speaks to them.
So here's a question that may seem misplaced in an interview about hiring formerly incarcerated individuals, but what's so special about your craft beer? There are so many breweries now. What sets you apart in terms of taste, smell, production?
That's a great question. We have a couple ways that we're going to be really grounded in a sense of place, right? So we just released a beer that was infused with juniper branches. So not juniper berries like gin, but the actual branches themselves. And the branch of the tree has a cedar aroma, and the needles have a lemon foresty scent to them. And we've already had people say, I was transported to the middle of the forest when I smelled that. So it's about seeking out flavors that you don't encounter in your everyday, because then you don't, you know, associate them with a specific moment. But if we can create new flavors that maybe you haven't had in beer before, but you recognize somewhere else, that really has that transportative effect.
Now, you've committed to hiring, what is it, a certain percentage of people who are formerly incarcerated? How is this going to work? How are you going to fulfill your pledge to this project?
We overall are just committed to creating this space for all members of the community. So that takes shape in a lot of ways. One is community programming. We want to host Pay What You Want events. We want to do community meals. We have our Second Chance Partnership Program, where we just cut a few checks to local organizations. I can speak a little bit more about that. And then there's, of course, working with Carl on the Second Chance Hiring Pledge. So specifics of the pledge right now are to 2 formerly incarcerated folks within the first 12 months. We push it out to as much as 12 months because we're not actually going to be hiring until probably April at the earliest. And you know how construction can work. And we wanted to make sure this aligned with our actual timelines. But I told Thomas, we're looking to hire a lot more than that. And it is about intentionality. And so I've been working with Reentry Columbia and Lori Scott over there, with Greater Hudson Promise and Adolfo, and talking to Kamal Johnson, the mayor of Hudson. For us, it's our intent. It's what we want to do. And then getting these organizations that know the right candidates and kind of connecting that all together so that they can help us find the right people if we have the will to make this happen.
As an employer, do you anticipate that you'll need to think about the kind of support mechanisms you'll have to have in place? Because the challenges facing people returning home from prison are pretty profound. It's not just a job, right?
1,000%. Of course, this is a learning process for me, and I don't want to pretend to be an expert here. I've never employed anyone before in my life, right? But I'm just engaging in the conversation. So I've spoken with the folks at Grayston Bakery, how they do it. They have an on-site social worker. That's definitely in our future goals is having a social worker on site full time. We're thinking about different ways that transportation could make sense. Could we even link up a way that we could have folks safely transported, patrons safely transported to and from the brewery while also transporting our workers? Because I know transportation is such an issue. I am connected with a number of social workers kind of in the wider circle of the Return Brewing team. And since we are so small, we have some friends who are going to kick off the program with some pro bono work. That's really, really exciting. But short answer, yes, absolutely. We understand that this means a lot of support.
Thomas, this is one of, I would imagine, a number of private businesses that you're speaking with about this Second Chance Initiative. Tell me your hopes and dreams for this program.
I really hope to expand as much as possible. We were doing this before we got into contact with Mikey in a more informal way. We have like a short list of small businesses that would say, hey, yeah, let's like if you have someone who just came home and they're on parole, send them my way and we'll see if we can get them some work. With this initiative, I mean, attempting to get organizations, not just in Hudson, Catskill, but also, yes, Albany, Schenectady, Troy, to look at this in a different way, to look at hiring individuals in a different way in order to keep our community safer and to ensure that jobs are getting to people that really, really need them when they're being offered. I mean, this could be a statewide initiative, and I don't see any reason why this initiative could not get that big with us working with the communities that we're trying to affect.
Making a pledge to hire people returning from prison, in some ways it's not, I'm wondering if there's a way in which this is not just a, like a do-gooder initiative. I wonder if you can speak to this idea that employers stand to benefit from fulfilling this pledge. It's not just an employer saying, yes, I will do this charity for the community. Yeah. There's something to be gained here. Am I right about that?
You're definitely right about that. And you're right about that on so many different levels. But we have to have an honest conversation about recidivism and the causes for recidivism. I'm a formerly incarcerated individual. I'm 40 years old. The state got 17 of my 40 years on this planet. And I can speak to you about what it is to go on 10 job interviews in 1 week and be rejected by every single one of them. It's heartbreaking. It's demoralizing. And it pushes individuals where they don't want to go. It challenges an individual's sense of personal transformation that they may have gained while inside the system, in spite of the system, not because of how the system works. Now, when someone comes out and they ask for a job, they are asking to be a part of the community. They're looking to be a part of the community. They have the same responsibilities that every other community member has, except they have that one thing, that label that would prevent them from being a job. So what people who are employers have to realize is that it's not just about, I mean, a lot of people want to do this. And some people say, oh yes, that's a great idea. But there's always that NIMBY attitude that we all learned in high school, that not in my backyard. Yes, I'm all for this, but I really don't think that this is the right fit for me. Employers have to realize that it starts with you. And it's not just a responsibility that you have to your organization. It's a responsibility that you have to the larger community. I mean, if we want crime to stop, the first thing that we have to do is give people opportunities who don't have them. If we want to make sure that our communities are taken care of, it starts with opportunity. It starts with investing in giving people opportunities who would not have them. Otherwise, what are we really doing except making the path perfectly ripe and paved for recidivism?
Are formerly incarcerated individuals good employees?
I think that, in my experience, the best employees.
Why is that?
There is so much more incentive to actually gain work and stay employed. First of all, because it's a part of a lot of individuals' conditions of parole. You must seek and find gainful employment. And if you don't, there's a very good chance that you'll be returned to prison. So an individual that you give an opportunity to, who's most likely could be returned to prison if they don't have that opportunity, is going to stick with that employer for a very long time. I can tell you because I've done it myself. The individuals who gave me shots, I did my best to never, ever let down.
There's an aspect of loyalty that an employer would gain.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Can every employer make a pledge to hire formerly incarcerated individuals?
They could, but we're not just asking for the pledge. We're also asking them to, which anyone could just sign on to and say, yes, I'll do it and just forget about it. But what also holds people accountable is asking them to sign on as supporters of pieces of legislation that also would roll back mass incarceration on a certain level, like Clean Slate, like Communities Not Cages, like Parole Justice New York. We're not just asking people to put their names on a piece of paper so they can hold up and say, look what I did. We really want to see your support in a substantive way.
Mikey, can you tell me about how our listeners can learn more about Return Brewing and what you've got brewing, so to speak?
Absolutely. Returnbrewing.com. And really the best place to catch us though is on Instagram. That's where all of our updates, all of our new beers, everything comes out. I did want to speak to briefly this other program also called Second Chance. That kind of is how me and Thomas got rolling on the ideation together. We're looking for creative ways to use ingredients that might otherwise be discarded, turn them into beers, sell them, and then take that portion of the proceeds that we saved by reusing the ingredient, and then we're donating that or partnering with organizations that are doing this reentry work. So we just cut our first checks to Greater Hudson Promise After Incarceration, which is a New York City-based group, and Reentry Columbia over in Columbia County. It's very small. We're just getting the program started, but I think there's big potential here for ways that we can support each other. And me and Thomas have been talking about this. I think as the program goes forward, we'd love to have tangible things. So Thomas mentioned maybe a community fridge. Maybe we can, you know, take those proceeds and buy something like that, or it's prepaid cell phones for folks just getting out of prison. So really, really excited about that program as well.
What an incredible synergy between giving discarded produce a second chance and then turning that around and supporting second chances for people returning from prison.
Yeah, I'm so, so excited about the program. And if other breweries or cideries hear about this and want to get in on it, I think this could be a larger initiative as well.
Thomas, how can our listeners learn more about CARL, the Capital Area Relief and Liberation Project, and all of your initiatives?
At this moment, we don't have a website up, but we do have a Facebook page, which is Capital Area Relief and Liberation. That's the name of the page. There's also an Instagram under the same name, or they can contact me directly at carlnonprofit@gmail.com with any questions.
Fantastic. Well, thank you both for speaking with me about all of your work and this exciting new collaboration. I wish you all the best of luck.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much, Corinne. And also, Thomas, thank you for thinking of us for this program and pledge and really just taking it and running with it and creating a really awesome program.
The process that happened with these raises was that it came in the dark of night without any kind of process where the public or even the other legislators could have been involved in the conversation for. The increases themselves are outrageous, but the process alone is wrong. It is not a democratic process. I mean, and it is nothing new. I mean, earlier this year, we vote, the legislature had before it a resolution to vote to raise, increase the amount of money that the county executive could give away, which just turned into a slush fund for his campaigning, which he used against other people that were campaigning, saying that the Democrats didn't support giving to fire departments and veterans when he was using the taxpayers' money to support his own campaign. I mean, the outrage here just goes on and on. But what's important here is we hope we can remedy this. But it's going to take the people of Rensselaer County to call their legislators and say they want justice. I mean, if we are to represent equity, equality, and justice for everyone, now is the time for people to speak up. Cindy?
Yes. We are very happy that so many people in the media are paying attention now. It took that $20,700 raise to draw attention to the fact that corruption has been going on in Rensselaer County for years, at least the last four. As Peter said, we need folks to come out January 5th. It's a Wednesday evening. There will be a public forum. I know that we plan to address this with a resolution, And we would like the support of the public behind us. It's the only way we're going to make a difference, because we will continue to stand up. We will speak out. And we would like you all to show up and help us with our job.
Now I'd like to introduce Bob Blackman, who is the president of the Justice Center for Rensselaer County.
Thank you very much. Mary Beth and I moved here 16 and a half years ago, and we were pretty naive, I guess. We were totally unaware of the political disaster that this county sort of represents. But perhaps it didn't 16 years ago. We have a racist board of elections that tried its very best to suppress the vote of people of color. Finally, a judge had to intervene and force the board to locate an early voting site in the heart of Troy. We have a county legislature that lacks the moral fiber to adopt a simple, non-binding resolution on the Black Lives Matter movement. They just couldn't do it. They couldn't bring themselves to do the right thing in spite of the work of a few good people like Cindy and Peter here. What they can do, however, is arrange themselves a big raise, an 18% raise. And even the chairman, who was the instigator of that, is under investigation, as well as the indictment of the county executive. I've got a couple of questions for you. How many of you in the audience are getting an 18% raise? No? How many are getting a 5% raise? How about a 2%? How about no raise at all? How many of you are paying some of the highest taxes in the country and therefore supporting a corrupt regime? For sure, the shenanigans that go on in this building and sometimes in City Hall give us a bad reputation in New York State. So on the eve of Christmas Eve and near the eve of a new year, it's time that we start anew and revoke the county executive's pay raise. Yeah. Demand that he resign without a golden parachute. Yeah. Yes. And elect decent people to public office. Yes. We say enough is enough.
Thank you, Bob. Now I'd like to introduce Linda O'Malley, who is on the board of the Justice Center of Rensselaer County.
Yeah, I have other things I'd rather be doing today, you know. I don't know about you guys, but, you know, here we are. Seems as long as we are otherwise occupied, some of our so-called representatives do whatever they damn well please. And it tends to make us a little bitter. I'm a little bitter. You know, Democrats are bitter. Republicans are bitter. Third party, no party. People are sick of this crap. And the thing is that I get worried about is maybe you don't even vote anymore because you think there's no point because this stuff is going to keep on happening no matter what we do. Well, please, please don't get to that position because we need you to stand with us. We need you to be able to say that there's a better way, that we deserve to be represented by people who are honorable. Honor is not passé. Honor right. is a necessary part of who we are yes. As a society, and we have to stand for it. And please, please don't give up, folks.